Cambodia is set to become the latest in a series of Asian countries banning international surrogacy, following the arrest of an Australian nurse in Phnom Penh for running an illegal surrogacy clinic. Surrogacy is seen as the last option for infertile or same-sex couples, but amid exploitation concerns which triggered the Cambodian ban, is it the best way forward? Caro Wagner spoke to Paula Gerber, Professor of Human Rights Law at Monash University, about the issues of unregulated surrogacy industry.
Anywhere where there's no controls in place and money changing hands, there's the potential for exploitation. And we certainly see some examples of that. We also see examples where the surrogate doesn't feel exploited and feels very happy and privileged to have been able to receive this money that allows them to perhaps send their own children to school where they otherwise wouldn't be able to, or to buy a home for their family where they otherwise wouldn't be able to. But yes, along with the good stories, there are the bad stories as well. Properly regulated, I think exploitation and surrogacy can be largely eliminated, but it's, you know, you need to enact comprehensive laws, and it's often easier just to say, let's just ban it rather than try and deal with all the nuances that are needed to ensure that it's a fair and equitable and non-exploitative system.
In October 2015, journalist and feminist campaigner Julie Bindle travelled to India, posing as a client for a surrogacy clinic. She was able to choose an egg seller from a catalogue of white, pretty, middle-class university students. She says that the baby would be taken away from the Indian surrogate mother immediately after birth, but if the client is unable to bring the baby home right away, the surrogate can be paid to breastfeed the child until its intended parents are available.
One thing that really upset me in visiting these clinics with the stories that I would be a commissioning parent was the way that the women were simply a vessel to carry a baby. Her health and well-being was not of the concern of the clinic at all, beyond that she produces a healthy baby because this is the product that I was paying for.
Professor Gerber again.
If we look globally, I think the best countries with compensated surrogacy regulations are probably the Ukraine and part of the United States, in particular California. Ukraine still is not ideal because it discriminates against non-heterosexual unmarried couples. So a de facto couple or a gay couple cannot go to Ukraine and engage in surrogacy. So perhaps if we look to California, then the intended parents are recognised immediately, even perhaps before the child is born, as the legal parents of the child. There's legal protections in place to avoid exploitation of the surrogate and to make sure that she retains control over what happens to her body and to the fetus that she is carrying. The sort of things, if we were to regulate compensated surrogacy in Australia, that I'd like to see put in place would be things like perhaps a minimum and a maximum amount of compensation that can be paid, so that we don't have the sort of the designer babies that we see in America, where you pay top dollar for a Harvard donor, for example, but also minimum rates of compensation, so that there's not taking advantage of poor people who see this way as their way out of poverty. Other safeguards we could put in place would be, for example, having the surrogacy arrangement, the contract, approved by an independent body, such as in Victoria we have the patient review panel that has to approve everyone who's undertaking fertility treatment. They could easily take on this additional role of approving surrogacy agreements.
But Ms. Bindle believes the process is inherently exploitative. She says that the risks present in pregnancy and in egg extraction mean that surrogacy can't be considered a legitimate job.
It's not a job when you are talking about your labour being delivered from the inside of your body. There, aside from prostitution, there is no other example. Now, you would never see it as a job if a man sold his kidney in order to come from, for example, the Congo to Europe to escape war and famine. You wouldn't see it as just a job like any other if an Indian man was held in a blood bank for 6 months in order to have his blood harvested and extracted once a week for sale on the open market. So it really only is when it's women's bodies that are involved that there is this discourse of labour and work. And it's just an attempt to normalise what is severe abuse of women. It's seen as an amazing amount of money, particularly for women in developing countries. It's said that she can build a house, send her children to school, never know poverty again. But remember, the poorer the women are, the more likely that there is a third-party exploiter involved who will probably take the money and give her peanuts. And in surrogacy, there is that smiling, blonde, white poster girl. She is, you know, very kind. She doesn't need the money. We don't see the blood and guts and heartache. At the end of the process, there's a pink-cheeked, smiling baby to be handed over to a couple that's desperate to love a child. The reality is somewhat darker. And it is a business, remember. It's a commercial trade in women's wombs. It is womb trafficking.
But for some couples, surrogacy seems like the only viable option. Professor Gerber says it isn't fair that couples who are unable to have biological children are told to foster or adopt someone else's child.
There are a lot of families out there, in fact, engaging in foster care arrangements. But I don't think you can say to every infertile couple, either medically or socially infertile, that you're not allowed to start your own family here, take this child and foster them for a while.
With over 43,000 children in out-of-home care in Australia, should Australian couples be looking to outsource pregnancy? Ms. Bindle again.
When people decide they will address either infertility or a practical inability to have a child, and they go to rent the womb of a woman who's desperate enough to do that, what they're doing is putting their lifestyle choice and desires above the rights of poor and brown women primarily to be treated with dignity and respect and to keep full body autonomy. If people are so desperate to raise a child to the point of where they will pay and go through massive legal hoops with residency and passports and adoption and the travel usually to other countries, why don't they go through those hoops to adopt a child or a baby who is without a family and languishing in a children's home or foster care?
Julie Bindle ending that report by Caro Wagner.